Hello and welcome to the BSG podcast. I am your host and extremely late to the show, Chase. How are you guys doing today? And with me to talk about a juicy topic, which is going to be our control review finally, is Quinn. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. If you don't know who we are, we're an informative bi-weekly podcast focused on gaming news and discussions. On Mondays, we go over the news for the week, covering everything gaming without the BS. And on Wednesdays, we pick a juicy topic to cover or game to review and give our half-informed opinions on those topics or those games. This game in particular, we played a long time ago. Not a long time ago. We played a little bit ago, and we've been waiting to give you our review. Control, as Chase said. If you want to give us your opinions on the game, you can do so on Twitter at BS Gamers Podcast. We would love to hear what you'd have to say about this game. Or maybe you haven't played this game, but you've played like Alan Wake and stuff like that. You can even talk to us there. Or the links between Alan Wake and this game. We want to hear it all. But what else could they do, Chase?
An even bigger step in the process would be to rate and review us. You know, that's what we need. We need those 5-star reviews, baby. We need everything you want about how great Control is and how great we are talking about it. But it, just in case you say, hey, this is not a 5-star review, this is a 4.5-star review, which is probably not possible, but that's not the point. Go to Twitter and tweet us there and say, hey, do it better. And then maybe we will get better. And then post your 5-star rating and review for us, okay? Thanks, brother. Sister.
Or sister. Uncle. Or non-gendered being. Alien. Whatever you identify
as. Non-binary.
Yeah, exactly. But it is time, Chase. Are you excited? How long? How long have you been waiting to do this? It is like the biggest review, I think, out of all of our reviews.
We did arguably, Sekiro, this is... Yeah, no, this is probably bigger than Sekiro in terms of sales. Do we have a sales
number? Well, just
number?
In terms of, not in that sense, but in the sense that we both played through this around the same time. And we actually had an experience, you know what I mean?
I don't remember
like
the game.
Like, Alan Wake was an old game. This was a current game. And we both went through it. And we both played through it. And now we're ready to give our opinions and all of that good stuff. I feel this is a pretty big moment for me. I don't know about you. Maybe it's nothing for you. Maybe Sekiro was the big one. But for me, this is something I want to talk about. I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah, maybe the next game that we review, you'll actually beat that game as well. I'm excited. This could be a year where you beat games.
I don't know if it's this year, but you know. Maybe we're playing it. We're getting in an upwards toward a trajectory. You know, when we get to 2020, the sky is the limit.
When season 2 starts. All right, let's jump into the review.
Let's do it.
So, Control was developed by Remedy Entertainment, a Norwegian-based company, and directed by Michael Kosserinen, probably a Norwegian guy, who was the lead gameplay designer of Alan Wake and lead director of Quantum Break. Sam Lake, who was the creative director and writer of Alan Wake, also served as Control's narrative lead alongside Anna Miguel. Development for the game started before the release of the studio's last game, Quantum Break, and they wanted to embrace a game that was more focused on player-built narratives rather than the structure they used for Quantum Break, which focused heavily on full motion video and cinematic set pieces.
This new game, Control, would have a mode... What the f... Oh.
You just read it wrong.
Oh, my... Holy shit. Hold on. My screen. That's what's going on.
You're an idiot.
Write the time down. Hold on 1 second. It's missing like 5 pixels in the center of my screen. What the fuck? What the... How do I fix this?
You lost a pixel? Really?
No. There's like... I can't see... Like, I didn't read it wrong. There was no R because they were missing pickles. Oh, I see where it is. I'm just going to put it right there. Okay, that's fine. This new game, Control, would have more of an open world than the previous games and would revolve around a rich game world that could support players crafting their own stories. Because of this desire to tell stories in a new way, many of the challenges the team faced were directly related to the stories they wanted to tell, and how to do so without inhibiting the player. How do we give the player a strong narrative without holding their hand? How do we tell interesting stories about the world that don't directly relate to the main character? These were a few of the questions they had to solve in order to get the experience they were aiming for.
The game has many influences ranging from movies like A Clockwork Orange. I have not seen that, Quinn. Have you seen that?
Yep.
Okay. And is it relatable?
It's very... both A Clockwork Orange and Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy are very similar in the corporate design of the game, if that makes sense.
Like the overbearing,
the like the big brother kind of government controlling the world.
The office stuff. Yeah, I get it. So yeah, they used a lot of influences from there to make their architectural structures. And then perhaps the biggest influence for the game was the fictional SCP Foundation or the Special Containment Procedures Foundation. I don't even know that one either, honestly, Quinn.
Okay, so the SCP,
why don't you go through this?
You don't know. If you're like Chase, this is a good learning experience for everybody. The SCP is this fictional organization that has a fictional archive on the internet. So it's basically, it's a place where people, it's similar to a forum, but people write scary, abnormal or paranormal things.
What's
about
that word
this
that
fake...
starts with a C? Conspiracies. So it's kind a place of. To find conspiracies.
Except they're specific to this fake foundation. They're specific to the Special Containment Procedures Foundation, which is a foundation that houses primarily paranormal / spooky, scary things. Like Slenderman is in the vein of the SCP. Or there are actually SCP games that focus around specific figures or monsters or objects from the SCP universe. But essentially this fake universe that has been created by people on the internet has its own fictional writings of the fake foundation. And like you were going to say, they serve as the backbone for Control's FBC, or Federal Bureau of Control, which
yeah,
do a similar
definitely
thing.
Definitely see in, that. I can yeah. definitely see that if that's the case. Sorry, I don't know
case.
Much about it.
It's all right. It's very. You only really get into it if you're like very spooky, scary. You're like really into horror writings.
It makes
like
me wonder what you did to decide to go and venture into that world of SCP.
I've played some of their games. I don't know how or why, but they were kind of a big fad maybe 6 to 7 years ago on the internet.
Wait, SCP is specifically for video games? I thought you said it was more general than that.
No, it's more general. It's like this body of online work that's fake, but it's written by... It's sort of like a Wikipedia about this fake thing called the SCP, the Special Containment Procedures Foundation. And people have been inspired by the SCP... And have made...
There's games, yeah.
Games. Yeah, have made like horror games.
Containment Breach is one of them. Is a
right,
free and
right.
open source indie. Oh.
They're all indie titles. It's all very
sense.
Small and stuff. And Control is sort of the AAA take on this weird world.
I like that. I like cool. that. All right. Why don't you continue with the rest then?
So the SCP universe has games of their own, like I was discussing, that mainly focus on horror. But Remedy wanted Control to be weird and give players a continuing sense of dread rather than scare the crap out of them. Although the game arguably can scare the crap out of you at some
right.
point.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a Silent Hill type of game. Where
it's
just
definitely
really
not a horror game. It's more of like a thriller type ambiance, dread and weird type of game, I would say. So Remedy also made significant upgrades to their in-house engine for the game, switching from a Havok-based physics system to PhysX. This allowed them to do a lot of cool physics-based stuff with the telekinetic powers in the game, which we'll talk about later. These new physics introduced new issues, though, to the game, as the AI they had developed for Quantum Break and Alan Wake had a hard time navigating the semi-destructible environments, as well as like being flung around. Like they didn't know how to deal with that, so they had to actually upgrade the AI in their engine to deal with the upgraded physics that they had. One additional thing to mention is that the PC, or on the PC game, it is exclusive to the Epic Game Store. Eventually we might see it on
Steam versus Epic.
Yeah, maybe we'll see it on Epic Steam. Epic wins again. But it is exclusive to Epic at the moment. Other than that, the game is set to have two DLCs coming sometime in the next year or so, with the first being called The Foundation, and the second being AWE, or, as Chase will recall...
What AWE stands for?
Yes.
Altered World Events. There you
go. I forgot, so I needed you.
Okay. I was like, oh, you put me on the spot to remember something? Oh, fuck. You know, I played this game and finished it earlier than you. Fuck you.
No.
All right, let's move on to graphics.
Let's get on to the actual review, right? Let's talk about our opinions about how this game is a game and what it is a game about, etc.
So, when I first... played this game, honestly, I think was very amazed at the graphics. It was just ridiculous how lifelike a lot of the models were, which is understandable because they did use real life models, real people to emulate the people. And what I thought was interesting was that a lot of the characters were not perfect looking. If you understand what I'm saying, like usually when you play some, I don't want to say older games, but if you play certain games, they'll make them more symmetrical and perfect when you look at them. And it feels like these characters were a lot more real or human, you could say. AD was one of my favorite characters in the game in terms of like how he looked and was designed. Like he was supposed to be a janitor and he totally looked like a fucking, what was it, Russian or...
No, he looked like a fucking creep, my man.
Like a creep, sure. But he looked like, good.
Like it's funny that you are saying that you really liked the people, or I guess like the models of the people in the game. I felt like that was one of the places that the game was sort of lacking.
There were issues, and I think the hair was the one that I had an issue with in terms of the character models, was the hair did look a little weak. Like, it's not... I hate to compare it to Japanese hair physics, but
right.
Japanese hair physics really feels so much better than it does in, like, this game, Control.
I don't even know what that means, but sure.
Well, they put a lot more time into creating the strands, and it actually looks more lifelike, you could say. Like, you can compare it to Final Fantasy XV's hair, especially in the cutscenes. They're actually really good. I'm not saying that they're not better here, but they didn't feel as well-developed.
Okay. Well, I just Control. Think the main... The game in action, right? The graphics in action, I think, are really good. There were times when you're talking to characters where I felt like the characters could have been a little bit better. The main one I'm thinking of is the... I forgot his name. He's like the second in command for security. And...
Did he turn into one of the evil creatures?
No. He stayed normal throughout the whole time. Like his boss did, but he was second in command. What?
Darling? No.
No. He's one of the side characters like Hope, but lesser to a lesser degree. Anyways, I didn't think he looked good, and I thought a couple other characters could use a little more detail. They did have this very, I want to say, fuzzy look when it went to the cutscenes. Not so much fuzzy, but I did notice that the game itself had film grain on it, much like Alan Wake did, and maybe that was adding to the fuzziness that I was seeing when in cutscenes. But when actually playing the game, I thought that's where the game really shined. This game, although me and Chase couldn't use it, has ray tracing ability, which I'm sure added a lot more.
That would
be
really cool to see. So if you don't know what ray tracing is, apparently Quinn told me that it's real-time lighting.
Yeah, it's basically like real-time lighting and reflections. So if a material is more reflective, it will actually, you know, reflect whatever... It would basically do a real-time reflection of something.
Yeah, you would need the 2080?
The 20 series. 2080, 2070, 2080.
Yeah, if you
Max
wanted
Q,
to
2070,
use
Max Q, 2080 Ti, all that stuff. Yeah.
That's ridiculous, but the fact that they would be looks, able to get to that level.
Yeah, that's if they could that. Take it to that level, I'm sure it just... Like, I've seen people use Minecraft with ray tracing, and Minecraft looks incredible. Like, actually, that was interesting enough. Side note, but someone was proposing that you take old games like old games you'd be into, Chase, and add ray tracing to modernize them instead of redo everything. Just add like real-time lighting and it would be amazing.
Now, do they have to be 3D games to do that? Just wondering.
Not necessarily, no.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, we'll talk about it later someday.
But how did you feel about the visuals while playing the game? Like the design of the game? How about the UI behind the game? I felt it was pretty minimal.
Yeah. I don't want to say completely minimal. I would say to the point that it was only what was necessary. And then the menus, I guess you could say, looked simple looking as well. They were just in a lot of blocky style. Nothing crazy while looking at it. It really looked like, I guess, almost like looking at a database with files. Like it was that type of blockiness. I don't know how if you can describe the UI better than that. Like it really felt like I was working at a company, and then I was looking at a computer interface, and then I was clicking on these the menu system for it. That's like I feel.
Oh,
like
you're talking about the menus.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought that was nice. I mean, it wasn't like extravagant, but I feel like that fit the game.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's kind of true. Yeah,
the
menu
just
system
now.
Is kind of well, ingenious last minute thinking. Yeah, the menu system was kind of like that. It was you had to sort of go into these folders. They didn't actually look like folders, but the mechanic was you had to click into this menu, which would give you more options, and then you would click in and click out to find what you needed. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That kind of fits. I also think, the whole thing takes place in this office building type of situation that is manipulated as time goes on. But yeah, it does fit.
Yeah, and the area looked amazing in terms of like it really felt like you were working in a how do you call it altered office, I guess you could say, or like a like you're working in a paranormal office, I guess that's what it would be like. Like it looks like a legitimate office area, but then like there's paranormal activity going on. Like that was it was good. It was well designed that way. That's exactly what it needed to be, and that's exactly what it was.
Right. It definitely gave off like Stranger Things office vibes.
Yeah, that is a good comparison because Stranger Things is supposed to be like in the real world kind of idea, and then all of a sudden it's just like there's these blemishes of altered
the, like,
or
upside down world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I think getting back to graphics, at least for what I have to say about graphics, I think their game really shines with the physics-based powers in the game. That's where things start to look really cool. And like, I never had any problems with frame rates or anything. And the main gameplay mechanics, I guess, revolve around your main character's ability, and I guess the enemies as well, ability to use telekinetic powers to lift up objects and throw them around or explode objects and stuff like that. And I think it all looks really, really good. It reminds me of, obviously it reminds me of like Alan Wake, but how I felt like Alan Wake's light mechanic really fit and made everything like come together. Like the telekinetic physics-based stuff in this particular world and environment, like you never get to see an office just torn to shreds by like just telekinetic powers. It's so cool. And like all these folders and papers are flying everywhere and office chairs are being flown everywhere and things are just exploding.
Yeah, they had a good medium for that stuff, I think, for all the papers and flying. Yeah.
And I think that's where the graphics just like, oh, this game looks good, you know?
And I even want to mention, like, you can use your telekinetic powers to grab any object. And you could even grab the background, you could even say, the concrete on the ground. It's not even loose. You're just taking a piece. And it shows actually you taking that piece off.
Right.
And I think they did a very good job creating the design for this game. And it looked great.
So that goes like back to their like upgrade of their physics engine was that like if you shoot, let's say, a concrete wall, it will chip off. But not only that, you can just rip off pieces of the wall with your powers, which is looks so good.
All right, you ready to move on to story, Quinn?
Yeah, the big shebang.
All right, let's do it. Go ahead, Quinn. You can do it.
All right, fine. The story begins with Jesse Faden walking to the Federal Bureau of Control, the FBC, in search of her lost brother after a traumatic event 10 years ago. Polaris, a supernatural entity who has accompanied her since the event, has pointed her to the FBC. Through a series of incredulous events, Faden becomes the director of the FBC when the former director, Trench, commits suicide. With Polaris's supernatural protection, Faden searches for her brother while clearing the Hiss, a supernatural force attempting to take over the dimension, from the oldest house, which is the building which the FBC resides. Jesse learns more about the FBC, Polaris, and herself as she settles into her new position as director of the FBC. What do you think, Chase?
So, the general scheme of this game, like, what is your goal, is not difficult. Your goal is to essentially find your brother, and whose, I believe his name was Dylan, actually.
Yep, Dylan.
I finally double-checked that about, like, 10 times. And your goal is to find him and then leave the FBC. I mean, that's the essential idea. Now, if you actually go into the granular portion of the game, it's confusing as fuck.
Right.
I don't know if you agree with that. I mean, do I understand the game? I feel like I understand it, but it took a while to really understand, like, okay, you have this, like, weird consciousness thing named as Polaris. You have the Hiss, you're battling against. Who the fuck are they? What are their aspects into the story? Why are they there? You have the FBC, the agents helping you. Why are they calling you the director? Like, that doesn't get answered. Like, I know it's doing it on purpose, but
right.
It's very confusing in the beginning, and not really until the end of the game, even after the faux credits, mm-hmm. is when you actually understand what the fuck is going on. What about you, Quinn?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, in a lot of respects, I enjoyed that, right? Like, not knowing. And in a lot of respects, even if even after the real credits, I still didn't completely know what had happened.
Yeah, I looked up after. I'm like, what the fuck happened?
Right. Like, I felt like I got a good understanding of what happened, but it made me really... This is what I love about the game, is that... And to the developer's credit, to Remedy's credit, like, they pretty much said, as they were developing a game, like, hey, the biggest thing we want to accomplish is, like, having this rich world that the player wants to explore, but ultimately they're going to be playing within it. They're not going to know everything about it because it doesn't revolve around their character 100%. Like, there's more going on outside of your playable world that the player is going to want to know about. And that's how I felt about it.
Oh my God, like, yeah. There was the Alan Wake shit that was happening in Control. Because this game was more about world building, in a sense. At least, mm-hmm. not. I don't want to say about world building mainly. It was more about the fact that it interconnected many of the games. Now, I don't know if it connected Quantum Break or any of the other games.
It was just Alan Wake. It was just Alan Wake.
Okay. So I just wanted to double check that. So Alan Wake felt like it was ended on a sour note because the sequel wasn't really interrelated with it. We mentioned that in our previous episode. And so we wanted more. And it seems like Control was the answer to Alan Wake's universe, the Alan Wake universe.
Yeah, maybe not. I think the answer is a good word to use. Like, it wasn't the conclusion of Alan Wake's story, but it gave a lot more background as to what were some of the unanswered questions in Alan Wake. Like, how did Alan Wake even exist as a game, right? How did the story even exist? And essentially, Jesse's story and the FBC explain a lot of what Alan Wake is as a story.
He was even technically a main character in a sense for the FBC because he was he P6?
P5. Yeah, he was P5? Yeah, P5.
P7, your brother's P6. What did P stand for? Person 5 or Prime Candidate? That's what it was.
Prime Candidate, yeah.
Yeah. We'll get in. I guess we can get into that now. So basically, the FBC is this like over-engrossing entity that is to protect, you know, paranormal activity from getting out into the real world. And so that being said, there are these altered events or objects of power is one of the words that they use, or basically paranormal activity that happens outside of the FBC, and their job is to regulate it.
Right. They contain it. They gather anything that might have otherworldly power. They gather people who have been affected by the power, or at least monitor and watch them. And Alan Wake was, in the context of the story of Control, Alan Wake was one of these characters that they were monitoring, as he was believed to have a lot of, I forgot the actual word they used, but I think it's paranautical ability.
That sounds right. But
it was something similar to that. Essentially, they were ranking people in the world based on their ability to control or interact with
objects of power.
Paranormal activity or objects of power, which are objects that have been imbued with great paranormal abilities.
For example, I would assume that in Alan Wake, it would be the typewriter. And then right. In this game for Jesse Faden, it would be multiple objects such as the gun that you get. I forget the
main,
if there was a name.
Yeah, the main weapon.
It's the main weapon. There is the rubber ducky, which is fucking hilarious. I never got it.
Floppy disks, refrigerator, like anything could essentially be.
Gotta be careful for the. I guess we have to make a distinction. So there are altered objects and there's objects of power. This was a main distinction. Right. Objects of power actually granted the user abilities, whereas the altered objects were things with paranormal activity inside of it. Let's go with that. And
it also gets kind of confusing there too, because you have those. Essentially, Jesse could interact with altered objects, but she wouldn't necessarily gain a power from them. But in one instance, which I'm assuming this is one of the DLCs is going to expand into this, was that the refrigerator was this altered object that needed to be monitored at all times, or else it would do something.
Kill. It would kill, essentially.
Oh, right. It would kill.
So this was such a cool part for the world building portion of the game,
right.
Was that they had to send agents to watch a refrigerator that needed, like, I guess, lust or some sort of idea where it needed to be watched at all times. It lusted that. And if you ever looked away,
it wasn't like a camera. They needed the refrigerator needed a person to physically watch it. You could not blink at all times. And a side mission was this character had been sitting all day because the FBC was invaded, and that's how Jesse became director, but that's a whole other thing. So he didn't get his shift break, and so he's been watching this refrigerator with his eyes like almost bleeding, essentially, and your job is to go find someone to replace him. Ultimately, he closes his eyes or blinks something and is eaten by the refrigerator. And Jesse tries to cleanse the altered object, which results in a huge boss fight, which was a surprise.
It was actually kind of hard, that boss
fight. It was, yeah.
I don't know how you felt about it, but that was some tough shit right there. And it makes me wonder how it relates, because I don't feel like it was related to the Hiss, which was the main
right. So boss I of the game. Remember, I could be wrong, but I believe the fight or the battle with the whatever, I think it was called the Foundation, and that's one of the DLCs, so I'm assuming the DLC is going to go into this other potential enemy, which is the Foundation.
This game really, so I guess let's reel it back again. So this game has a lot of side content that you can do, which makes it great for learning and world building. But what was the point of the story? The point was, as we said, Jesse Faden needs to find her brother, Dylan. And Dylan has essentially been taken over by the Hiss, as we mentioned, is this entity that wants to take over the world, essentially. Or I guess that dimension. It's a little confusing.
We don't know the entire objective, but essentially the Hiss is like this Hiss. The Hiss in I guess its own way is another dimension, but it's filled with like negative resonance or I forgot. I think they were talking about resonance. So it's like this specific paranormal resonance that just wants to control minds and essentially become a hive mind with as many beings as possible. And then Polaris, which is the...
it's opposite, almost.
It's opposite, right. It's counter resonance, which is housed within you, is what essentially the Hiss and the Polaris were found in the same dimension, and they were in a eternal battle against each other. But the FBC unknowingly released both of them into our current dimension, and that's how the FBC was invaded by the Hiss, and ultimately Polaris is forced into Jesse Faden forevermore, and
that's where the game is. Story into Polaris and right. why she's attached to Jesse Faden, but we'll let that the user or the player to get into that.
There's so much here. There's so much rich content. It's really good. It's super good. The writing, my God, Sam Lake killing it. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, every game I've played, at least, that Sam Lake has made has been great. So
The story is always just so solid. And I don't finish games, all right? Chase already alluded to this. I don't finish games. I was going above and beyond. Chase just tried to breeze through it because he's like, I want to review this as fast as possible. But I was like,
well, no, it's more like I had time.
Oh,
I had time back then.
I was like, I need to go read every single document and try and find as many things as I can because this story is so interesting to me and this world is so interesting. And it came out of the game and I was thinking, there's so much content here story-wise. There needs to be more, right? And I was happy that they said they're going to have DLC, but there needs to be, if Control's world stops here, that would be unfortunate because I feel like they put so much time and effort into building this place.
Yeah,
and
I guess the game ends in a way that actually makes it want you to know more, or at least feels like there is going to be more story. So right. I would be very upset, like Alan Wake, if it stopped. But the good news is Microsoft wasn't part of this game's creation. So likely they can continue on making DLC.
Right. I think also the good thing, too, is that it doesn't... I just hope that Sam Lake, the writer, has more in store in his brain. Because, look, he's waited, 10 years or something to go from Alan Wake to Control... And yet they still have a lot in common. So even if there's no Control 2, and I'm not saying that Control is the best game ever and I need a sequel, but I'm saying if there is more writing done on this universe that Sam Lake has created with Alan Wake and Control, I want there to be some other thing created with more of this.
Yeah, I'm down for the story content, specifically DLC-wise. I don't really want a Control 2. I think... this game would be neatly wrapped with a little bit more DLC. I think that what would be more useful is kind of like how Brandon Sanderson does a lot of his world building books. I don't know if you know Brandon Sanderson off the top of your head, Quinn, but
you're talking about the RPG fantasy writer, yeah?
Yeah, he did War, like Words of Radiance and
Oathbringer. King, what's the King one?
Mistborn, Final Empire, all these books, and they're all there's more, but the point is that there are distinct groups of them, and so it's like Alan Wake versus Control is they're distinct, and then they're in the same universe, and that would be really fun if they did something like that. I think this is a company that's capable of doing that.
Right, and I think we're jumping ahead talking about sequels and stuff, but I think at the end I'll say that I agree with you is that I think these shared universe games ultimately add to each individual game. Like the fact that the Alan Wake and Control are related makes me enjoy Alan Wake and Control more.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's now more hours and game time and experience going into the game. Like there's shared experience before I even have to start, right. Which is awesome. Right, let's move on. Is there anything more you want to talk about story? You want to move on?
No, I think gameplay is our next area.
All right, let's get gameplay. How do you feel, Chase?
So this game, just to get a little bit of background, is a third-person action adventure with mainly shooting elements and paranormal powers or paranautical. I don't know what the fuck the word is. So some of the abilities that you can have is you can fly, throw objects with your mind, which is fucking awesome. You can control enemies with your mind. That's another cool, fun little feature I used all the time. I think it was flying I used the most, then it was throwing objects, and then it was actually mind control was my third most used move. I didn't really use the shield blocking ability that I got later. The game did feature RPG elements, which would be like you level up with your primary weapon, and you can also gain paranormal abilities, so you would have like mods that you can attach to your weapon or yourself, you can kind of say, in order to strengthen yourself, such as getting more health, do more damage, gain more energy so you can do more of your abilities where you throw stuff with your mind, etc., like that type of stuff. And as we mentioned before, is like you can throw anything. That was a very beautiful thing that they did with the physics engine, whereas where you can grab whatever you want. And so this game, for the most part, there was a lot of action, a lot of fighting, but there were also points in the game where you could do puzzles. Obviously necessary puzzles to actually move on through the game, like there was the one with the computers where you had to guess the correct password using like the symbols. There was stuff like that. And then some side stuff, which I didn't personally go into as much because I didn't feel like it was actually good, was timed missions and the side missions where you would, sometimes fight a bunch of enemies in order to gain more experience and grab better loot. I didn't really do much of that. The side missions I did some, but not the timed missions.
Yeah, it's kind of, I felt like, and I'm sure you probably agree with this, is that the timed stuff was kind of misplaced. I don't know. Like, I can see it was like, oh, hey, if you want a break from the story, you can go like fight a couple enemies and level up a little bit.
The story was too good to want to go to the timed missions.
Right.
I don't know.
Also to go to most of the timed events, it was like, oh, you have to fast travel across the map and then run to go where these fight, like where these monsters are or where the hiss is. And
fast travel was convenient in this game, but it wasn't convenient enough to actually want to do the timed missions all the time. I don't know how you felt about that, because they didn't get you to the exact spot. It was just an area more so.
Yeah, it was kind of like it would get you near, and then you'd have to run to where it was.
Right.
And you do have a dash in the game, so there's flying and dashing and stuff like that. So you can get there fairly quickly, but there wasn't enough incentive. It just felt like if I need to grind out more things, I'll go do some timed events. But ultimately, after I did one or two, or I think I did maybe three, I was like, I don't need to do any more of these. They're a waste of time. And I'd rather do the main mission or the side content.
The actual side content miss things were very well were generally in good quality, though.
Right.
For sure.
Right. Some of them weren't. So that's like the thing, is that I felt like it was kind of a mixed bag. Some side missions were well worth playing, like the refrigerator one, for example, but others were just kind of these weird. I felt like they were trying to give more replayability to the game, even though the game itself doesn't really lend itself all that well to replayability. And we'll talk about that later, but I think like the timed stuff specifically was like, oh, here's stuff you can do forever, because every hour or so we'll have a timed event, which is going to be 20 minutes long, and you have to go fight these things.
There was also, like, you're bringing up a good point about how all the side missions weren't that great. There were some side missions I definitely didn't want to do, which was, like, helping my crew that you would actually have in the game, because there were other agents helping you out, quote-unquote. And, like, one of them was to help the crew fight a certain number of, monsters that are patrolling certain areas. And these weren't timed missions. They were actual just...
Yeah, those were really annoying. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't mind them, in a sense, because I didn't actually look for them. So I guess it was kind of fun when I stumbled upon them to help, in a sense. Because sometimes what I would do is I would take a mission and, like, not go to it. I would just say, okay, maybe if I see it at some point, I'll help. And so that made it a little bit more fun. But if you actually went to do the mission, I wouldn't find that fun at all. It was not great.
What I would add on to that is the the board. So the in addition to these side missions and stuff, you can take on like passive side missions, which were called board countermeasures. So there's supernatural entity called the board in control, which is the board of the FBC, but they exist on a different plane of existence or something. And so the board will give you like kill X amount of enemies with headshots or kill X amount of enemies in this specific area. And I found that after you did all the like decently fun ones, like the passive ones, which is like, oh, just kill people by throwing them off a wall or throwing them in a wall or shoot them in the head or do melee damage, etc. Like those were decent because it's like, oh, I can just pick these up and passively get through them. But after a certain point, it becomes all kill this enemy, this type of enemy in this specific zone. And those were way too much effort to go do.
Yeah, passive, it's never a bad thing to have passive things where you can gain experience through that because it makes the game flow a little bit faster. But when you quote unquote make you feel like you're wasting time in leveling up, it's like, it's called grinding. Nowadays, grinding is not a thing that is fun to do now. Like back then, like playing Final Fantasy VII, I'm sorry, I was to bring it up. Playing Final Fantasy VII, playing, I don't know, think of some other grindy games, but like any RPG back in the 90s, in that time period, grinding was a thing.
Like, well, I don't even think it's not considered grinding unless there is a thing to grind for.
You're grinding for good items. You're also grinding for level. Right, but in like Final Fantasy VII,
you need to grind to get a certain level to beat a certain thing to progress in the story. And Control, there's no incentive to do any of these.
You could argue that, but I could also argue that it's to make the game easier for players who are not as good at this game. Because I think the game has some challenge to it, and then if you leveled up and had a better firing rate or more health, which is the thing I needed the most, you know, this game would be easier.
Yeah, I think so, but I think I don't know. I think in this game, it's less of a thing. And what the main thing I'm trying to say is that the passive missions, the main fault is that when they become location based, they're no longer passive.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're chores instead of I'm passively getting experience. It's now I have to actively go to this area of the map and find five of this specific type of enemy in order to get the experience benefit.
Now, the side missions were good. Some of them, as we were mentioning, if they were the ones that built the world, those are fine.
Oh, yeah.
If they just built the
world instead of like a lot of these side things or the passive missions, if they added to the world, that would be incentive enough to go do them. But because they don't do anything except give you items or potentially a little experience, it feels like a waste. It really does. But if I found that like one of these missions was to, go to this sector to kill a couple enemies because there's an altered object over there that we need to investigate.
Now that's interesting.
Then it'd be like, I'm gonna go check out what this thing is about because there's more story there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of the gameplay, so I guess to give a general thing, the overall gameplay was good except for those points where they were very passive missions or non-story building portions of the game. That's where we can fault it. But it was great when it had to deal with story. So yeah, that's what we think of the at least the gameplay part. How do you feel about pacing of the game? In terms of like when you were playing it, do you feel like it was going too fast or too slow with how much story you were intaking? Or I guess
I felt the pacing, there was definitely a lull in the maybe about 2/3 of the way in where I think when you're trying to find Dylan and eventually you find him, or you at least. You get word that now he like turned himself into you but you've gone through this sector of the FBC that houses like high priority objects and people.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt traversing that kind of slowed down a little bit, which wasn't an issue, but it was like, it slowed down a little bit. And then you finally got to meet him, and then things kind of ramped up a little bit again.
Mm-hmm.
I also felt that the biggest pacing issue I had was the moment, like, the game ended. Like, the 2 minutes before the game ended, I was kind of taken back. I was like, wow, I've been working all the way up to this, and the payoff was a little bit weird. Especially because 10 minutes before the game ended, things were going crazy and I was having a really good time. Like, you were mentioning how there's a faux ending, which is insane. And that whole series of events is like one of the coolest things ever. But then once you get through that, all you have to do is like jump over or fly to a few cubes and then you're at Dylan and then the game ends.
I see where you're talking about now.
Like that, okay. That last little segment where you're just jumping a couple blocks
finding
just to get to him.
Finding some monsters that were like, they're difficult, but they didn't feel like it was adding much to the game.
It just very weird that you go from this really cool event, right? Where there's a faux ending, the game starts glitching out. Then Jesse Faden is now, I don't want to like get too into it, or maybe I do, I don't know. Jesse Faden is essentially in this alternate reality in her mind where things have gone to shit. And then you break out of that. And then it just becomes like, oh, now you have to grind through a bunch of enemies and then the game ends.
Yeah. So the final, there was no like big. So I guess when we play games, there's usually some form of final boss, you could say, and it didn't feel like it really had that in this game.
Or even it was weird that for the best, one of the best things about this game is the story, and the ending had none of that. The ending was all fighting, which is fine, but it was fighting waves and waves of baddies.
Yeah,
it was weird.
I agree. It wasn't. Weird. Yeah, it didn't bring enough story juice into that area. As for me, the pacing was fine overall. I thought it was perfectly fine. The last part, sure, you can argue it. It's fine. I wish there was a final boss. That was it. I wish there was a final boss
right. That
culminated to, like, as the climax was getting to that point. Like, there was a lot of climactic events. But I didn't feel like there was a climax, and I hope that gets answered in the DLC.
Yeah, especially since throughout the entirety of the game, Dylan, through like just the player finding stuff out about Dylan from papers or other characters, Dylan is hyped up to be this fucking paranormal badass guy that will can destroy everybody.
Yeah, there was a scene in the beginning of the game when you're trying to find Dylan where he just like fucking destroys the entire lab or wherever he was in the prison area.
Right.
And I'm like, damn, he's fucking powerful. But then by the time you find him, he just gets stuck in like another prison that your FPC agents created. And that was it. There was nothing special.
He doesn't do anything. And the entire rest of the game, even though the end of the game, he's technically like the final boss or whatever, he does nothing. And it's so disappointing because it builds him up as like, he's your rival. The whole thing, even him talking about his dreams and how like I keep having this dream that I'm supposed to be the director and then Jesse is supposed to be like the secretary or something, and it's all backwards and she takes everything from me and she's destroying my life and blah blah blah, blah, and she never came for me and she doesn't love me and blah. And then it's like, whoa, okay, there's a lot of conflict here, and then it's just like, oh no, you just have to fight a couple enemies and then touch him and the game's over.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing. But everything else was great, so we can't fault it for being like the few areas that it was bad. I mean, it is a major area, but I have a feeling the DLC is going to answer that.
Maybe. Getting back to gameplay, how did you like the abilities? Because I have a feeling that you didn't unlock the like secondary abilities for all of the abilities.
You'll have to explain which one of the secondary ability, because the ones I use the most were the mind control, not mind control, excuse me, the throwing of the objects, so right. telekinetics. And then I really liked the dash ability was great. The flying was really useful. The only one I really didn't use was the blocking skill because I never really needed to use it. I would just kill things and then
be good to
if
go.
If I was injured, I would just hide behind a wall.
Right.
And then throw shit at it.
The blocking eventually gets to a point where you can make... So you the blocking ability is you pull rubble off the ground, you make a shield in front of you. Sort of like a earthbender in Avatar or something. But when you level it up to a point, it basically acts as a shotgun. So anything in front of you, you push all the rubble
at. And yeah, I'm assuming you have to upgrade it at some point to get that ability.
Right. And this is one of like the... Like, I like the idea that it allows your abilities to improve over time, like the telekinetic pushing of objects or throwing of objects. Eventually, you could throw enemies, and eventually you could throw, like, larger enemies. And you could do the same with the mind control. You can mind control multiple enemies, and then you can mind control larger enemies. And the flying, you had a ground pound eventually when you built up to it. And I liked that you could sort of pick your gameplay style and get like level those up. I just hope with the DLC, instead of giving you more skill points to unlock all of those fully, they give us more objects of power.
I think there will be.
And more abilities.
Because there were a lot of objects of power, I feel like, that weren't are still unknown, is my point.
Right.
Because there's that area that you go to where all the objects of power and altered objects are in. So I think that's going to be a good possibility.
Right. The main reason I'm saying this is because by the time you get to the end of the game, I felt like there wasn't a whole lot going. Like when you hit probably like 2/3 of the way into the game, you pretty much have your playstyle down and you're not going to really be upgrading much. Like, you are going to upgrade because you'll have the points, but I felt like I was pretty much doing the same thing gameplay-wise over and over again, except I was getting slightly stronger and the enemy was getting slightly stronger. I think it was good. Everything was good. But if the game was a little bit longer or if it asked me to do more of those timed things, I think it could get pretty boring after a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be like Alan Wake where they added new things that they didn't implement into the actual game. Because right. if we can, you know, if the designers are anything like they are in their previous game, they're going to implement the ideas that they didn't get a chance to in this game. And that's hopefully what will happen.
Well, we've rambled on far enough. You want to move on to sound?
Yeah, let's move on to sound. So this music wasn't, and I hate to always compare it to Alan Wake, but that's the game we played recently. I don't feel like the music was as great as Alan Wake's music. And I'm not arguing that their music is bad. I think the music in Control was good and great even. But it's not as memorable to me. What I think they did really well with sounds in terms of like the game and what was really good was that they had a lot of televisions where Darling, the doctor, would come in and do these little like TV episodes about the building or the building of the game, such as like the oldest house, which is the FBC, like what is it about, what are some of the objects of power and gathering information. Like, that is great. I thought that was phenomenally well done.
Yeah.
There was also stuff like you would get these tape recordings, and one of them I liked gave me information about Jesse Faden's life. I guess like meeting with a psychologist and telling the psychologist or the psychiatrist saying, hey, none of this stuff that you saw about paranormal activity was real. It's all fake, essentially, and that you're a normal girl, blah, blah, blah. Like, finding those little pieces were like really cool. And I think those were awesome. But in terms of like, was the music really that great? I don't remember much of it at all, except for maybe the ending was good music. But what about you?
I can agree. I can see what you mean. I feel like it definitely isn't memorable. The music isn't memorable. I don't remember any of the tunes or anything like that, and I definitely remember at least the Alan Wake intro episode music is always the same, and you kind of you know it's Alan Wake. But I do feel like Control's music and soundscape was really good. I felt like the sounds of the weapons, the sounds of the abilities were especially good. The sounds of the hiss, or at least the floating bodies that the hiss has taken over but aren't fighting you, they did that really well. Like it's basically like mumblings of all of these office workers, and they're just sort of floating there mumbling these weird things to you, and that sounds super creepy. And all of the creepy aspects of the game sound really good.
Yeah, I don't want to downplay the music or anything, the sound. I'm just comparing it with the music, and the music just wasn't as great. But go on.
Right. So what I was getting at was, all these little things that they put effort into making sound good, kind of put the music in the background. Which I'm not trying to make a pun or anything, but like the music, it takes a back seat, and it's not as memorable as like the just experience of playing the game. The only real memorable thing I can say music-wise was the radios that you could find and turn on. And there's one specific section in the game where you find a sound booth where I think the object of, or not object power, the altered object was a cassette or a record potentially. And it played a song by the fictional band that's in Alan Wake, or I guess in this universe as well. It played a song by them that was essentially talking about Jessie's, like her goals in the game and how she's going to succeed in doing this and this and this. It was kind of weird. It basically just talks about Jessie, metaphorically. And there's a sound booth, and it's like, we subjected people to this music over and over again to test this altered object to see if it had any paranormal activities. And that was cool. And that was like memorable, just like hearing that and listening to that like all the way through, and like freaking out about all the connections to Alan Wake. But in terms of just soundtrack wise, nothing super memorable, but it fit the game really well.
Yeah, I don't have much to say besides what you just said for sound. I think I really want to get into the replayability because about the Alan Wake stuff, I kind of want to go back into that. So there is a fair amount of replayability, I think, in this game, especially if you played it like me, where you played the game to kind of go through the story and understand the story and not go through every little nook and cranny. I think Quinn was more of a nook and cranny type of player when he played this.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's awesome is because you can find a lot more information about the Alan Wake universe or the ideas that, I guess, like represent Alan Wake with the altered objects and the altered world events and etc. Just like, it was so awesome to find information about...
Right.
About the world, about you might want to do this on your own, Quinn, about like some of the things you found about Alan Wake. But it was so fucking awesome to find that. I loved the record, or not the record, the recording that I found about God, what was the name of the author in
Zane, Alan Wake? Thomas Zane.
Thomas Zane. So fucking cool to find like that people that Jesse Faden knew about Thomas Zane, but no one else did.
Right. That's a story element in Alan Wake, is that like no one knew who Thomas Zane was.
Yeah. Except for like certain special people.
Right.
That one Lady of Light in Alan Wake knew. And I think it's because maybe she was touched by the paranormal activity that was going on. And so maybe it makes sense why she knows and not everyone else. And I'm just like, fuck yeah, this is so cool.
The only thing I have to say about that is because I found what I think is a decent amount of that stuff, the replayability for me is like zero.
Is DLC only.
Right. I really want to go find everything I can, all the story bits and pieces, but ultimately story was the main driving point. And if I'm just wandering around the world trying to find more stuff, it's not going to be enjoyable for me. They try to make it more replayable with the timed missions and other things you can do to just I guess, still earn rewards, etc. But there's no reason for me at this point to replay the game or really touch it until there's DLC out. I do have to say, though, that, yeah, when I was finding stuff about Alan Wake, I was, like, sending Chase photos. I was getting really into it. I was really enjoying myself, like, oh, my God, oh, shit. Like, they're talking about it again, and they're talking about how he was potentially, like, P5, and they were going to put him as director, and
then they don't know where he is. What the fuck happened?
Like, he was being monitored and watched, yet he, like, disappeared, and they can't find him, so...
I have a feeling that I hope he comes back in the DLC or something. Excuse me, not come back. Hope he is in the DLC somehow. Like, they joined forces to, like, outside of the FPC to, like, deal with
it. They're going to have a weird Avengers sort of situation where they're going to make a third game.
I think it could work.
I think it could work.
I think it could work if it's outside of the FPC. But the problem is, I don't know if this game will ever be outside of that. But I think it could work if they did. If Alan Wake was inside the FBC, I'd be a little skeptical, but like, why would he be in there in the first place?
Right.
And it would be too shallow of an argument, I think, to say why.
I don't think the problem is that I see Jesse Faden as like leaps and bounds more powerful than anything Alan Wake can do.
So well, it's the kind thing of is like, he can alter, I guess, the story reality. That is happening or reality. And that's a pretty powerful skill. If they can somehow manipulate to look better in this game. And I agree. Right. If it was solely based on, oh, he uses his fucking flashlight to do shit, no, it won't be as good. But right. I think maybe
like
they can make him more powerful.
Flashlight. It's just like flashlights.
They could make him more powerful, I think. Like, he's gone stronger since over the years, and he's like trying to do something. I don't know what he would be doing.
He's like so far into the darkness that he's gained supernatural abilities.
But we know that, like, the doppelganger exists, at least.
Oh, right.
So maybe they go after Mr. the doppelganger. Scratch. Yeah. So I think there's a possibility there. Like, their job is to work together to go against Mr. Scratch. And I would totally play that DLC.
Well, with the DLCs already being named, I feel like there's probably a lesser possibility of those happening.
What are the names, you know, off the top of your head?
So the Foundation is the Foundation, and then Altered World Event are the two DLCs.
Oh, Altered World Event. There you go. That would be
the potential. I feel like they'll probably go back to what was
Dylan,
it called?
Probably.
No, what was their hometown?
Oh, shit. I don't know what the name of their hometown is. I'll look it up while you keep talking.
Normal? Common? It's like... Common, normal.
I'll look it up. You keep talking.
Oh, God, that's gonna bother me. Anyways, yeah, I think they're probably gonna go back to her hometown and figure out what actually happened and sort of fight from there. And
ordinary.
Then the foundation. Ordinary. There we go. I was like normal.
You're close. Something. Yeah.
Ordinary, and then there's the foundation, which I think revolves around the paranormal monster that was in the fridge. Or taking hold of the fridge.
Yeah, that needs to be addressed a lot more. I think that'll definitely be addressed in the Foundation one.
Right. So that I believe when you fight that boss, the boss is called the Foundation. So I think he'll probably talk about that some more. Yeah. But yeah, for me, the replayability isn't there until the DLC. I can see like how there's definitely a lot more you can learn if you want to explore. And there are also I remember just from playing that there are areas I could have explored more, but I didn't. Because there was no direct incentive, and they were pretty hard because there's this thing called the mold in the game, which is this other entity that you have to fight coming for. It's like it's a mold, I guess, that grows in the FBC and it takes over people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I felt the mold was far more difficult than the hiss. And I just felt like I'm not going to try and go as deep as I can in these mold areas because they're pretty difficult.
Yeah, were they the ones with the tracking missile shots?
Yeah, the tracking missiles, yeah. Yeah, and you couldn't really see them because they were so fucking far away. They were like sniping you.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. All right, your final thoughts on this, Quinn?
Final thoughts.
A game that should be bought, recommended? What do you think?
Well, it's actually on sale right now, and I mean, it's not going to be on sale when you probably listen to this. But what that means is that it is a game that is now going on sale. And for the sale price, which I think is like $40, I think this is a buy. I think if you have the money, it's definitely a buy. It's such a good game. And I know it's only really based around the story. And the story is maybe like 10 to 12 hours long. But for me, that was well worth the ride. It's such a fun game, and it makes me want to go back. And I know I won't go back because there's not a whole lot for me to find right now. But man, that was such a good game, and it was such a good story. If you have it on, if you have a console, I say renting it is perfectly fine as well. You don't have to deal with all the Epic stuff and junk, and you can just spend like whatever $5.
Wait, stores still rent? I guess you go through
GameFly. I don't even know if GameFly still exists. But if you pro tip. If you buy something from Best Buy, you have 2 weeks to return it. And if you buy something from GameStop that's pre-owned, you also have a week to return it. So renting, quote unquote, and not paying anything for it.
But yeah, I recommend playing this game even without playing Alan Wake. But I highly recommend, finally, like I know I said before in the previous review with Alan Wake, don't play Alan Wake because it sucks the ending because you're so sad that you want more. Right. Now I'm okay with playing Alan Wake and then playing this game, and it'll satisfy you a lot more.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you are looking to play Alan Wake, there's never been a better time. You play Alan Wake, skip American Nightmare, and go straight to Control.
Yeah, don't play the arcade. That's not canon. So
yeah.
Well, okay, guys. Thank you for listening. That was a good episode, actually. I thought that was fun.
Good
to talk
job,
about.
Everybody. Yeah, hands in, high fives all around, pats on the back.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you guys for listening. If you want to get a hold of us, I would recommend going on Twitter at BS Gamers Podcast. Share your opinions, share us your love about this game. I guess if you found a lot of information about Alan Wake and Control and how they interrelate, I have a feeling Quinn didn't find everything, so it'd be really fun to learn more about it.
Yeah, tweet us. I want to know anything that you guys found. That you found interesting. Doesn't even have to be Alan Wake related. I want to know anything I can about the game. That's for sure. The world is just so interesting. But yeah, if you want to do us an even bigger solid, if you like Control and you like us, you can leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choosing. That would do us so good. So good for the soul. So good for the heart. Chase would be warm inside during these cold winter nights. But hey, slow down there. I see you're about to leave a review that is less than 5 stars. If you're going to do that, I would ask one thing beforehand. You tweet us your critiques and your complaints, potentially, and give us some pointers as how we can improve. And we will try to do so, and maybe after that, you can leave us a more positive review.
I hope it's not like going to be one where they say, Chase, you need to kill your dogs. They're too loud in the background. I'll be like,
or like, Chase, you need to leave the podcast.
Please don't let it be those things. Hey, Quim. So I guess before we end this podcast, do you have any ideas of what our next review should be on someday? Like, do we have a game that we
what
should
be playing? Someday? Our review should be on someday?
No, a game. What do you think our next big game should be? It doesn't have to be our next review, but the...
Overwatch 2.
Fuck yeah. At least it'll be PvE and I'll be semi more interested in Overwatch.
Jesus Christ. I'm yeah. So mad about that. We'll talk. Maybe I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But
all right, guys. Thank you for being here. We'll talk to you guys later.
See you later.